Right. Okay. Thank you very much, indeed, everyone, for the presenting and speech marks teams. I think you did an excellent job in the rooms that I was sat in. Hopefully, you learnt a few things. Lots of scribbling. So this is just really a wrap-up area. We can go wherever you want on this one. You know, large macro questions you want to raise or kind of anything. At this stage, we will record this if we think it's you know that there's enough questions that are worth then transcribing and putting on our website, you know, to link to the webcast. Then we will, but really it's up to you. So questions you got, Sunil, you got Bill here, the whole team that you would have met during the course of this afternoon. So really over to you. I'll hand it over. Alistair, if you just.
Yes, Alistair, I'm Bank of America. I suppose it's the question is, what are the constraints on the growth of this business? What's the balance sheet constraint? What's the investment constraint? I mean, clearly at the top level, those are things we give Bill a hard time about constantly. But, you know, within the framework, what are you given to work with? So the opportunity set's there, but what are the constraints on what you do?
No, thank you very much. I think this is a region where the demand for capital is massive. And for us, we need to manage the risk. We need to be selective in terms of what we take on. And we should have the confidence also to distribute it. It's very, very important because you need velocity in your balance sheet. So for us, returns, ability to structure, distribute become very important. And an element of that also is the cost of funding. So the pricing has to be right, which is linked to the returns. So that's on the corporate institutional banking. On retail, we want to grow profitably. As I was mentioning to one of the groups, we are not, I think it was, you were there in that. We need to really use or utilize the investment that we made on the digital front to grow the customer base in a profitable manner. And for that, we have to understand what is the cost of acquisition and servicing, which is what we are deeply into. I wouldn't call that a constraint, but that's an imperative. Our model is quite different because that's in a channel for us. We are not a standalone private equity funded digital bank. So.
It's Manus Costello from Autonomous. You talked in various sessions about needing to meet the group return on equity, return on tangible target by 2021. But don't these regions have a higher cost of equity and therefore should have a higher hurdle rate applied to them? How do you feed your thoughts about local cost of equity into the returns targets which you would have for these regions?
Mohammed, do you want to take that? But in terms of...
Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. In terms of the cost that is allocated to us or the capital that is allocated to us, it takes into account the higher risk that these markets carry. So if you look at a market, say, like Pakistan or a market in Africa, the capital that we have to carry takes into account the higher risk of that particular market, which means that the returns that you see are on a higher capital base. So that's already built into the returns criteria that we set for ourselves. So we carry, if you look at a like-to-like loan booked in a high-risk market versus a low-risk market, the capital charge is higher. And that's the way we compensate and conversely, you need to have a higher return required to cover the higher capital base that is required.
Yeah, so I think it's really spot on. From a local perspective, actually we're already there, right? In most of our markets, we are anywhere returns between 15 to 25% based on invested capital. But because we incorporate the country risk as well, we have a concept of notional capital allocated to these markets based on the risk of these specific markets. And accordingly, when we say we want to achieve our hurdle rate of 10%, it's based on adjusted risk metrics and adjusted capital, even if not invested in the market itself.
Okay,
Hi, Sunil. It's Raul from JP Morgan. If we look at the history of Standard Chartered, one of the mistakes the group has made is to go down too much into mass market retail in other markets. But clearly that doesn't seem to apply in Africa in your current strategy. Why do you think that is different? And what are you doing differently now to not make the same mistakes of the past?
I think the fundamental difference in Africa, since your question is on Africa, is that the mass market in Africa is not asset-led. It is liability-led. So your RWA charge is zero. And the interest rates and the returns that you make on them are very, very healthy. Our challenge is how do we grow that base and how do we put more capital-light products onto that base? And that's why, digital helps us, and that's why we're putting quite aggressively our wealth management and bank assurance products onto that market. If you had an asset-led mass market proposition, you carry a lot of risk. This is a liability-led mass market proposition. That's a fundamental difference.
Questions? Jenny?
Jenny Kirk, Exane. Can I ask about kind of capital efficiency? Because if I look at your RWAs, they've kind of come down a bit over the last few years. But some of that's going to be the op risk. A few of that's kind of amongst the RWA densities. But as we look forward, obviously, there's quite a bit of regulatory RWA inflation that's going to come through. And if I look at the breakdown of AME, the majority of the profits are being driven by the CIB. So I'd assume that the majority of this capital is allocated to the CIB. How do you think about kind of improving the returns in that to compensate for the additional RWAs that are coming through?
We've been very disciplined about our RWA. And you're right, bulk of the profits are from CIB. And if you look at the new business that we book, there are clear thresholds in terms of returns. We are not looking at aggressively building up on RWA. What we are really looking to build is our distribution capability. That's key. And that's linked to the first question that I answered, our risk appetite and our ability to distribute, because the demand is there. We will, of course, grow in a calibrated manner, but if the returns are attractive, yes, we will take those steps. But we are not looking to grow RWA in any aggressive fashion. Our focus will be lead a transaction, book a deal, but then distribute. Use our ECA relationships, use our multilateral relationships, use our development finance relationships to credit wrap, credit enhance, and then distribute. That's what we are focusing on. And that's very different from what we used to do, say, 4 years ago or 5 years ago. That's a very fundamental difference.
And are there further efficiencies you think you can find that can compensate for those incoming RWA? Because obviously that is quite a big part of the group.
No, we are taking steps. So below 3% return book, we are selling down. We are selling down. We are taking some upfront losses, but then we are booking stuff which gives higher returns. We are exiting certain markets in terms of certain customer segments where the returns are low. So we are creating efficiencies as we have created on the cost base. We are creating on the RWA base and then substituting it with better returning assets.
Yeah, it's Martin Leitgeb here from Goldman Sachs. Is there any particular market which stands out in the broader region where you think the market could be target for a particular growth strategy for the group? Is there anything you think you might be missing in terms of either from a product perspective or one of the major markets which would help you better serve these trade channels and corridors you have highlighted earlier?
Any of the markets where we could potentially grow faster? Is that your question?
Or anything you think where your footprint is too small at this stage, where you could benefit as a franchise, as a broader franchise, and for the network, if you were to focus more aggressively on growth?
So if you look at our footprint across Africa and Middle East, clearly there are three large markets where we don't have a commercial banking presence, a commercial license or a branch license, or an operation of any scale. One is Saudi, where we have a limited license, and we've now obtained a full branch license, so you will see us expanding our presence there. South Africa, we have a branch license, but our operations are quite limited in that sense, quite focused. The market, the nature of the market is that you've got four or five really large players, similar to a couple of other markets like Australia and Canada. And there, if you really need to grow, you need to have certain inorganic kind of aspirations. And the other one is Egypt. So these are three we see as immediate large economies where there could be an opportunity to grow further, either by getting new regulatory licenses or growing what you have. While we wait for the next question, for the benefit of those who may not have been in some of the sessions, I think the questions that we got were very much focused on the four themes that we spoke about. One is the network. A lot of questions around the value of the network and how are we differentiating and getting into the granularity of it. How could we grow that quicker? What is required to grow that quicker? So that was quite a interesting and robust conversation. The other one was around retail and digitization. What value does retail bring to the overall franchise? And how is digitization? It was very well received, but how is digitization? What aspirations do we have for digitization? Some of the aspirations we shared, I think some of you felt were quite conservative, and maybe the runway ahead was far greater. We take that on board. And the other one was around the underlying economies. Where do we see, when do we see growth kind of growing, going up from the current 2-2.5% to a more normalized 4-5%? So the sessions that we had were very, very interesting. But these were the large thematic questions that were raised. And what was the plan B if some of the large markets or the segments within those large markets didn't ultimately end up performing to the expectations that we have or the metrics that we've set for ourselves. But yes, please get back to the questions.
Africa as a continent is often cited as an area which has suffered in particular from a protectionist or discriminatory approach to trade by the European Union. How well positioned do you regard yourselves? How well are you positioned to take advantage of any liberalisation of trade which may arise if the UK or other countries manage to escape?
So EU is the largest partner, trading partner for Africa. And we see trade in Africa growing a couple of ways. One, as you mentioned, if it opens up and there are bilateral trade agreements reached. But I think fundamentally in the medium term, I think there's the intra-Africa trade that's going to really change the game. And what do I mean by that? The Continental Free Trade Agreement, we've had a good start in terms of the agreement being signed up and agreed. There are 54 countries that had to sign up to the agreement. Currently, the intra-Africa trade is only 16% versus 60% plus in the EU and 50% plus in ASEAN. So there's a potential in the medium term to really create a large, robust intra-Africa trade platform. And that's what we are quite excited about. We are working with and having conversations with some of the development finance institutions that are looking at creating the core infrastructure and the regulations to facilitate this. So in the medium term, I think that's going to be a big game changer.
For the transcript, that was from Investec. Thank you, Ian.
It's Andrew Coombs from Citi. A couple, please. The first, the deliberate de-risking actions and the regulatory changes in Kenya and Nigeria, $230 million income attrition. Could you just give us a feel for how much of that is in CIB versus how much of that's in the retail bank?
So de-risking was both in CIB and in the retail bank. CIB mainly to reduce the tall trees and the concentration risk that we had, and retail was largely on the high risk personal loan portfolio, where we felt that the economic cycle was taking a turn for the worse, and we decided to move ahead, and de-risk that. In terms of de-risking and the regulatory, you said, yeah, regulatory was largely on in Kenya, largely on retail, Nigeria was, I think, 50-50 between transaction banking as well as retail.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just on the retail and the digital proposition, you've rolled out in 8 countries. You've got quite ambitious targets in terms of client acquisition. It's a very compelling story. Yet when we look at your revenues over the past few years, they've clearly stepped backwards. If you were to try and strip out these items, can you explain just a bit more what the revenue headwinds are on an underlying basis in that retail segment that you're facing?
So I think retail was a segment that got impacted the most from currency depreciation. As I mentioned at the outset, if you look at between 2015 and 2019, we lost about $400 million of revenue just because of currency depreciation in markets like Pakistan, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Ghana. Retail challenge currently is primarily in 2 markets. One is UAE, which we've called out as a country, and Rola and the team have done a good job in terms of returning it back to pretty decent profitability. But retail has just about turned profitable there, and we need to address that and really enhance the returns, because UAE retail is approximately 50% of our RWA for the entire region. So we need to fix UAE.
Sorry, what was the number?
It's about half in terms of the overall asset base. So UAE needs to be fixed for the overall retail returns to be acceptable. So that's where we are.
Again, I just got the final question along this theme. If you look at the revenue split between CIB, retail, commercials, CIB the majority at the moment, retail making up most of the rest of it, where do you see that same split in another 3 years' time? Do you expect retail to grow faster than CIB from here?
Retail, in terms of percentage, would grow faster, of course, benefiting also from a lower base. But CIB is a much larger business, and we don't see that slowing down. We won't want it to slow down. So it's got a good pipeline. It's got a great proposition. It's got fantastic returns. So we see no reason for slowing that down.
Any more questions? Okay. Great, lovely. Okay, so thank you very much, and the team, thank you very much. But most importantly, thank you all very much for coming. Very happy to sort of take questions in a more informal setting. But for that, I think we can close the session. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.